Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Gamer Talk podcast. Martin Teichmann is my guest today. Hey, Martin, happy to have you here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, so Martin is a lead environment artist at Crystal Dynamics. We had some back and forth to find the right timing because Martin is living in the States and I live in Germany. So how's it going, Martin?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's unusually early for me on a Saturday morning, but I'm all good.
Yeah, so you don't work on weekends, I imagine. So what are you doing, any side projects at the moment?
Yeah, there's always something going on, like some small side projects. Like I'm working on Unreal 5, I'm working on a little bit on like in a medieval city builder village style scene right now. It's the fun for it. And then I also have like my antique shop that I still want to polish up a little bit more. Maybe make a video in the near future.
Okay, cool. Something like a tutorial or like a complete overview of how you build stuff?
I'm not sure about a tutorial because that's not my strong part. And I know that I kind of would probably need like a year to record like an detailed video tutorial out of it. But yeah, you never know. Maybe I'm getting inspired and I want to do it. But there's so much awesome content out there already, so I feel like I can't add anything to that. But yeah, I think I want to kind of just make a little kind of walkthrough, kind of scene to show all the details that I made for this scene. Just create that. Not that I spend so much time making it. I kind of want to also kind of make sure that I present it in a really nice way. There's always something to polish. There's always some corner you find it's like not up to quality, or like you have ideas and you want to add more things. So
like a little breakdown of how you did specific parts, how you did some material work, how you did some lighting.
Actually more like a little, like just a walkthrough in terms of like I'm creating like a nice gameplay camera, if that's a field and everything, like more like nice presentation. Maybe showcasing some detailed shots of some of the world building or detail assets, but it's more like a nice kind of walkthrough.
Nice, cool. So yeah, you have been around in the games industry for quite some time. I'm just going over your LinkedIn again. You started out 2007. Is this like valid?
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, damn, it's really a long time ago already now. Yeah, yeah, it was like my very first job in games when I went to university in Erfurt, like in East Germany somewhere, like ages ago. There was like one game studio in Erfurt. It was like really small. I think it was like 5 people at the time, and they were doing a point and click adventure game. And I basically kind of joined them as like after my study times, like in the evenings, afternoons, I would just come there, go there and help them build some of their backgrounds in 3D Studio Max. It's like quite a while ago. Yeah. And I think the same year I also had an internship at Deck 13 working on Veneti. Yeah, I think they're doing pretty well. They just released Atlas Fallen.
Yeah. So yeah, speaking about that, so you have some kind of, you are now in the industry since 15, 16 years. So how can you like say, how is it back then? What was like the main difference to compared to today overall, like in the games industry, but also in game development?
Oh yeah, I think that's a good question, because one thing that also kind of plays into that is because I kind of changed from working in smaller studios in Germany and now working in like larger studios in the United States. And I feel like there are like some differences, like budget wise, maybe also like, don't want to say talent wise, but I think in the US there's more like more experienced people around. Like that's something that I noticed when I moved to Naughty Dog or Rocksteady, that it was like more people that are like in like a slightly older age. Not just everybody was in their mid early 20s anymore. Like now we had like people that had kids and were like in their 40s, because it's like I think a little bit more serious. It sounds also not as, I mean, and like it sounds like more like an career path that's a lot around for quite a bit longer in the States, I feel. But I think in terms of how it changed, like so I'm working as an environment artist for all of my career. So I think one thing that of course like changes, like the typical thing, right? Like tools change, and workflows change. But I think the main thing is really like, yeah, workflow and quality and how long some things take. Like, I remember like when I was working at Deck 13 on my internship 2007, I was tasked to make a little furniture set for this RPG Venetica they're working on the time. And I made like in a week, I made like a set of like chairs and tables, wardrobes and stuff. And nowadays, I mean, if you would model everything, it would take a week to just make like a good chair or something. You need to do the high poly and then you put it into Substance. And of course you have to bake everything down. Maybe you even bake it in marmoset, you know, like there's it's way more complex. The quality bar is risen a lot. I also feel like it's way more accessible. When I started, I bought like books for 3D Studio Max, how to do certain things. And when I wanted to damn, I sound like super old saying that.
but that's cool, man. I really like that because there are not that many people out there, especially from Germany, where the games industry is so young and not even that big, like compared to the States or somewhere else. So it's super interesting.
Yeah. And I think I also remember like buying like, I think a Gnomon DVD, how to 3D model a character, and they shipped it, and it came from the United States, like a package. And now, of course, with YouTube and like Patreon and Gumroad, there's so much resource there. So I feel you're absolutely right. Now it's getting actually hard to pick what's actually good information over what is bad information or bad tutorials.
Yeah.
And I also remember like that there were like a couple of tutorials that were like really well known and spread around. Like it was just a handful and they were really good and they always almost set like industry standards in terms of like how to do certain things because there was really good tutorials. I remember like there was a I forgot the name of 3D Hub or something. They also did tutorial. Mm-hmm. I forgot it, but they did like this kind of pillar tutorial thing, like a damaged pillar.
Yeah. And
there was Unreal 3, Unreal Engine 3 times. And there was like the standard at some point, like everybody was doing it. You can see it like a lot of people had these similar assets in their portfolios. It was great. It was awesome. But I would say now there's so much information out there. Like there is no way why you can't learn it, but now it's quality it's really standards. Hard,
man. You could spend years to just watch tutorials and do tutorial stuff, but
The quality bar is so high now. It's it's not so much about like where to get information, how to use a tool. I think that's around. That's on YouTube. Like even like Substance, for example, they have a YouTube channel and they do awesome stuff on there.
Blender.
Blender, and it's free. Like you don't have to even go out and spend a lot of money or black copy it or something. You just actually download the industry standard software, and it's affordable or free.
So even for me, like I'm a Maya guy, and I wanted to learn Blender for quite some time now. And everyone is telling you to get add-ons for stuff. This is like so overwhelming for me because I don't know: is this the right one? Is this the right one? Is how's the workflow? If I need this add-on, I need to have this workflow. So it's like really overwhelming at the moment for me to switch software. So I stay in Maya because I know what to do and I know what to do with it, and I don't want to have a thought process on what add-ons to get. You know?
Yeah, totally. I feel you. I'm trying to move to Blender as well because I think like that's even though Maya is still somewhat I would say the industry standard. And it's still like somewhat what everybody kind of knows, like in a professional area in games. But I think Blender is just a better tool.
Yeah,
they develop it way quicker. The feature that comes with, it's just like you have to kind of rip off the Band-Aid and just jump over. And I'm still haven't done it because, you know, like it's always the same thing, right? You're in the middle of a project, you want to get your work done, and learning a new tool, it kind of sets you back by maybe a couple of weeks, and it's really hard to kind of start just doing it.
And then you switch back to the tool you know, and it's happening in in this, it's getting done.
yeah, maybe not the most efficient and quickest way, because it's also like a thing I'm in the industry for a while now, as you mentioned, and you're kind of used to certain workflows and kind of used to certain things and standards, and you know, even though the tool is not working super well, but you know at least where it breaks and you can work around it like naturally now. But I think that's also like a little bit part of, you know, staying on top of it and be aware of new tools, new workflows, new techniques, and try to kind of incorporate them if it's suitable, of course, like, you know.
So yeah, like speaking on your experience, so how have things changed? What did get better or what did get worse? Like maybe we can speak about that a bit. Like you have been in at some big studios in the States and also some smaller studios or bigger studios in Europe. So yeah, maybe you can speak about that a bit.
Yeah, I think in terms of just general workflows, I mean, Substance Around, and I think that's really a powerful tool. It kind of opens up a new kind of job in a way, because now it's like a material artist, right? Which I think it's also like, if you asked earlier, like the changes, right? I feel like it's more specialized now because qualities are higher up, so you can specialize more. That's something that I haven't really noticed. Like when I was working for Dex13 at the time, as environment artist, you would expect it to do like most of the things, right? And then I remember, like the art director, he would kind of go into the levels and put some lights and do the lighting and stuff. And now, of course, you have like specialized roles. I mean, lighting artists are around for a while now, but there's more specialization going on. Like as you mentioned in our brief chat before this recording, like you are a hard surface artist, right? Making more weapons, more vehicles and stuff, and I'm not really a good hard surface artist. I'm not really even a good prop artist. I'm just getting impatient. I want to just world build and do stuff. So because like now there's so many steps involved, and in a way, like that's something that I was hoping a couple of years ago when, you know, like when Substance came around, started being industry standard, the hope was to streamline the process a little bit and kind of cut off tools, you know. It's more like, hey, you have this one solution and it can do most of the things, and the steps are streamlined and broken down and easier, right? But that wasn't really the case, at least for my opinion or for my perspective. Like there's just more tools introduced into the workflow pipeline, you know. Before, when you make a texture, maybe you just take like a photo and cut it out and make it tellable, and maybe even use like Crazy Bump, if you remember that tool.
Yeah, I know.
To make like a normal map based of the base color or the photo texture.
Super weird if you think about it, right?
Yeah. And then you maybe make like a really quick specular map or something like that, and then you're done, right? But that's not the case anymore. Like you probably have to really either go into Substance Designer to make a really good procedural material with all the maps that you need, height map, roughness map, normal map, and so on. Or you work from a library, or you use like photogrammetry or stuff like that. But because it is, it became so much more complex, that it's just taking way more time to make a good material than maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah, and even more money. Like the production of games is like skyrocketing
there's more tools involved, there's more steps involved, you have to hand it over to a specialist and stuff, you know. Could be really well that you make the hard surface asset and then you hand it over to a texture artist that does the texturing, and then you hand it over to maybe outsourcing, right? And then they do the low poly and bake it down, and you know, it's quite a few steps. And I was actually hoping that this is going to be easier, you know, like you have, like you stay in one software, they have all the functionality you need. Certain things are standardized and optimized and automated, but kind of don't really see it that way happening, at least not in the future. But maybe Blender has some really cool, interesting features, you know, like the geometry nodes, AI is getting introduced into Blender. Let's see if that's gonna help out with streamlining some of these kind of really complex workflows.
Yeah. So, are there any downsides you would see in this like development over the last 15 years? Like, what was better maybe back in the days? Was there more freedom, more artistic freedom for artists? Because nowadays everything is so streamlined and everything is so like, yeah, a concept is getting done to perfection. And back in the days, maybe there was one concept for one scene and then it was thrown to the artist and do your thing.
That's also like, depends like on the studio. I think like when I was starting my career, when I was working for Deck 13, I started as an intern there and then I got a junior role after I got my bachelor degree. And I think it was more like the situation or the studio, kind of culture that I was really enjoying. Like even as an intern coming in, I got tasked with really very interesting, very challenging, complex tasks, like making like whole level chunks, even though I was really not that experienced. So that was awesome. And of course, like when you later on kind of work on big projects, like for example The Last of Us, right, which is a really strong IP, has a lot of very distinguished art direction already established, so of course there is less freedom for the individual artist on that particular project. But it, I think in general what it means, like with the tech advancements, like with Unreal 5 and Substance, and even though the quality is higher, but I think like the range of kind of art styles are a little bit higher as well. Before, there was more limitation in how good shadows looks, how good lighting looks, how good texture resolutions are, how many details you can use. That's not really a problem anymore. You can just put in geometry, especially when you work in Nanite and Unreal, Unreal 5. So I feel like now there's like a lot of creativity out there. Like you can make games that I mean, you can literally make a game that looks like Quake 2, right? I mean, the Quake 2 remaster just came out. It's a good example right now.
Yeah,
but you can make games that look like this. You can make games that obviously look like super photorealistic. You can make super stylized games, very toyish looking. And I think that's great. When you look back 10, 15, 20 years ago, then there was like more or less like these kind of art styles. Like everybody would do similar things because the tech was very limited now, was very limited back then. But now it's like, that's not really the limiting factor. Now it's more like the creativity. And of course, quality is expected now. You can't do a game anymore that has like major, I don't know, flickering shadows anymore or something. It's just not accepted, or runs in 20 frames, which was maybe okay a couple of years ago on PlayStation 2 or so. Now it runs. Yeah, now you should be at 60 frames, and so
if you're gonna get destroyed by the players.
Yeah,
it needs to run at 60 frames. And,
it's a good, it's a valid point. Yeah, but
yeah. Crazy. So yeah, how was it to work on The Last of Us 2? Like, how was it for you?
It's a great project
experience.
It was a great experience. It was. How to put it, like, it's really interesting, like, project. I mean, at this point, I was really at Naughty Dog for quite a few years. I worked on Uncharted 4 and Uncharted 4 Lost Legacy. And so I knew the tools pretty well. So it's a great, was a really awesome project. Being able to work on, I had like one big level chunk that I worked on for almost the entire time of my assignment, like 2 years on that. There was a lot of work because again, you have to hit the quality standard, especially Naughty Dog standards, and especially the Last of Us fan base.
They expect something.
Exactly. But it's also a good thing because it kind of pushes you as well. So
that's true.
It's a really good thing.
It was a fantastic game and a fantastic looking game. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, it's like a big team effort. Like when I say I worked on my level for a couple of years, there was like a designer involved, there was like different texture artists involved, different lighting artists involved, and all the assets, they were like outsourced. I mean, assets, props, most of them were outsourced. So
It was
a huge team effort in order to kind of create that.
So let's speak about your typical workflow for environment art in general. Like, how do you, when you start a new environment, what is your, like, what are your go-to steps?
Yeah, like if I can do like whatever, like when it's like really my personal project kind of thing, then of course, like I start with like an either an idea or like I'm inspired by a game or like something that that I find like fascinating, or maybe I want to explore a little bit. I think for the Antique Shop, which is the last kind of personal project I was doing, first of all, I wanted to kind of experiment and start looking into Unreal 5 that just came out. And also Unreal comes with it comes with Quixel, which is like this Quixel Megascan. It's a really nice library of photorealistic 3D scanned assets. And down here in Orange County, I'm living in Santa Ana, and it's really close to the city of Orange. And there's like this Orange Circle, just like a big roundabout with a couple of like a lot of shops, coffee shops, and a lot of antique shops around. There's like at least 5-6 of them down here in this particular kind of city center. And I was like exploring these at a time, a few of them, because it's always fun to walk through them and find like all these kind of vintage pieces, and maybe you need something for decoration purposes. So, and walking through these kind of antique shops was really like really cool, because I thought like, well, maybe with like, you know, mega scan stuff, I can just make a shop like that and make like a little scene with really cool assets and really nicely decorated and arranged basically. Mm-hmm. I also remember like that was years ago before that. I remember like I was playing Uncharted 3. That was like, I think came out 2011, I think. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was playing it, there was this one room relatively early in the game where you get into this room and it's filled with like this kind of props, with, like antiques and stuff. This little puzzle room, but I was like blowing away. I was already working in game industry back then. I was like, wow, how did they do that? There's so many detail, like so many assets. And again, it was like the time where it started to get more complex. You know, we have to break down assets and make high poly, low poly and all that. So that was like really a very expensive room. And this was still in my head. It was like, wow, I want to do something like that, where people kind of, when they see it, it's like, wow, impressive. Look at all these pieces and props and assets. So we can do a lot of awesome storytelling, just putting vintage pieces together in one room. So that was like the main idea. And so, yeah, that's basically like the very high level beginning of the building up this scene, basically. Like it was like, yeah, a little bit inspired by my environment, by actual environment here, by these actual shops. And then also like the reason was like, oh, there's a new tech out. I really want to explore it and play around with it. So let's dig into that. So that's like the initial idea, the initial spark. So usually I start with something like that. And yeah, then I start working on a block out, really rough, like just create spaces. In this particular case for the antique shop, this was more or less like a room or two, how to connect it, like what's the footprint of the room, maybe there's like elevations in the floor to make it a little bit more interesting, where do shelves go, where's the cashier go, you know, just like some basic block out. And then from there, basically start like slowly detailing it up. I make sure to not get into the detail too quick, because it's always easier to kind of move big things around. And, you know, when you add trim and bevels or whatever too soon, then it's getting a little bit more difficult to move like stuff around. And especially for this antique shop, I think I had like at least two or three times where I made it smaller, the rooms, because I noticed like putting shelves in, like, again, block out shelves with just like a couple of boxes, simulate like how many props I may need for filling these up. I realized that I need thousands of them. That's not going to work. So I made it smaller to, instead of two shelves, there's only one fitting, you know, and it's better to have like one shelf that is nicely filled with detail than having two that's like just copies or so, or half empty and stuff like that. So
you got lots of assets from Quixel.
Yeah, so that was the original idea, that I use a lot of assets from Quixel, because again, I'm not the biggest into making props. Like sometimes I like doing it, but I lose a little bit of patience. I love the world building aspect the most, the big picture stuff basically. So I was kind of playing around with like Quixel assets and realized really quickly that wow, I need definitely a lot more stuff to put, because of course, Crystal has a really large library, but it is a bit limited when you look for certain things, right? And making an antique shop, you can, of course, take a lot of things, but it starts to get a little bit limited because you need so many unique little things.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And at the time, what was really cool was that there was this new reality scan app just came out. I think it's from Reality Capture. Let me just check it really quick if I'm not saying the wrong name, because I haven't used it in a few days. Reality Scan. And that's basically like allows you to use your phone, the camera on your phone, to just 3D scan using photogrammetry. So I started doing that and got a couple of nice results. Maybe not the best, not on Quixel standards, I think, because, you know, it's a bit limited with the camera on the phone, but it's still pretty good. So I was scanning a lot of props and assets, a lot of items that I had sitting around here. And I was traveling back home to see my parents in Germany, and I was going checking out some of their items they had in a basement and scanning as well. So it was kind of fun. And a few of these assets are made it back into this antique shop kind of thing, just to filling up the library with nice props. I think overall I had like almost 40 pieces that I scanned for the game.
That's cool. That's super cool. Not for the game. There are some German props in as well.
Yeah. There's like a German, super old school German coffee tin can. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I will link all your portfolio stuff into the info box. So feel free to check out Martin's portfolio. It's super cool. So when does the lighting come into place? Like, is this something you will do at the end, or are you already in the process?
Yeah, already in the process. Like even already in the blockout phase, when I was blocking out the rooms for the scene, that's where the lighting already comes in. Simply because I have to know like how the light roughly bounces around, especially in Unreal 5, where it's all like more or less real time with Lumen. And you want to kind of know where areas of interest are. Like you want to kind of guide the player or the viewer's eye to certain areas, so you want to make sure that the light hits these areas. So that's like something that I would consider for the blockout. Of course, not the final, you know, like tweaking light is something that you can do till very last minute, and probably can go into it right now and keep tweaking the lighting a little bit, because it's always, you can always make it better. That's really important part, but that's why it's also important to get it in early to see how it looks. If there's like two dark corners, or if there's a dark corner, maybe you don't have to kind of put too much detail there, right?
Lighting never ends.
Yeah, for sure.
And when do you say like the environment is done? Where's the pinpoint you can say that I think this environment is good to go now? I think
usually that happens when the deadline's up. And for my personal projects, I kind of at some point set myself a deadline. I'm saying like, okay, one more week or two more weeks, you know, because you can fiddle and tweak on it forever. Like, at least that's for me.
I think for most
artists, it's pretty good. And sometimes really good as well, especially when you don't have too much time pressure. You can also kind of abandon it for months or two or three, and then come back to it with a fresh eye and notice now all the things that you may have not noticed before that. That's my hope, what I'm doing with the antique shop. Like, I have it on a pause right now. I mean, I post the screenshots on my art station, so that's awesome. But I kind of want to come back at some point and do like a video recording of it, as I mentioned earlier. And but I give myself a good amount of time to kind of come back with a fresh eye and kind of polish up areas that I may have missed, just to make it better. Eventually at some point, there's always like this phase in production where you get bored and sick of your project, because it is a lot of work and it lasts for a long time. For me, a big boost of like getting progress done on the scene was when I was in between jobs earlier this year. And I had a couple of months, like I had like 2 months where I had a little bit of time to actually work on it more than just an hour in the evening or so. So that's where I got like good progress on the project. But then even then, you know, at some point after a couple of months, you kind of feel a little bit like, okay, that's enough.
Yeah.
I want to move on to something else, you know, like as I'm working on a little bit more stylized stuff right now, which is like really interesting, you know, like you always want to do the thing you're not doing right now.
That's true. Yeah.
So and it's also like good to kind of set yourself like a deadline, because that also kind of means you may do like decisions. Maybe you cut things or wrap things up, streamline a few ideas, you know, because when you have this unlimited, open-ended kind of deadline, or no deadline at all, right? Then it's really easy to be like, oh, I'll do this and that, you know, and later maybe this. But if you set yourself like, hey, I have a month, a week, a day, you know, you'd be like, okay, well, do I really need that? Nope. Let's just remove it, or come up with like easy solution, like more clever solutions on the things. Like, hey, do I need to make a unique prop for this particular scene, or can I just reuse a thing and scale a little bit around, and then maybe put three other props on top of it, and then it kid bash more cleverly, I guess, without creating too many new unique things.
Yeah. True. Yeah. So like let's go into production for a bit. So when you have a given game design level, like there's a given level design for an environment, let's say. So how is it for you to find the right balance between level design and environment art, so you're not that limited into like art direction, and also you keep the standards of the game, of the level design? So where do you find the right balance in that?
Yeah, I think the most important part is to really closely work with the level designer on the level. I think it's also good to be involved early on, like to come, if they're not coming to you as an to you as environment artist, it's always good to kind of go to design and kind of interview them, ask them a ton of questions like, hey, this wall, this block that you put there, is this really important for your design, or is this like something that was added for, you know, like artistic purposes, you know, like sometimes there's a box there that could be anything, a rock, a house, you know, it just added to be like a wall. Sometimes it is really important that it is a house because, you know, there's like a enemy in there or something like that. But it's really important to kind of figure out what are the absolute important bits that need to stay really close, really similar, you know, like lines of sight, cover objects, paths, you know, all these kind of things. Maybe there's a puzzle and the hint is in a certain area of the level, and you need to kind of make sure that the player can find and see the hint from certain perspectives. So you need to really figure out what is important for level design in order to achieve what they want. Like, I remember there was this kind of level that I worked on at Naughty Dog, the on Uncharted, The Lost Legacy. So we had this kind of block out for the level that I was supposed to work on, which was this gigantic Ganesh elephant statues that the player is climbing all around. Yeah. And so the block mesh came back from design. The problem with the block mesh was that it was just not designed in a way that it would like resemble a good looking Ganesh statue. Like, what we basically had to do was to redesign the bits that the level design team wanted to achieve, but on an actual properly sculpted and modeled statue asset. And at the end, it was not important that, you know, all the proportions were exactly how level design blocked it out, because they were not after, like, they didn't want to do art. They wanted to kind of make sure that the beats are right, that it feels good, that the flow of the level feels good. And we had to basically like just remap it onto the new asset. And that's the most important thing, that you understand what's the intention, the flow, the of the design, right? What does design want to achieve in this level? Is this a quiet area where player should explore, you know, and there might be more room to kind of widen areas up, add more little details and corners? Or is this a combat room where the player has literally no time to look around for ledge grabs or for cover objects? So things need to be a little bit more obvious so that the player doesn't feel like he's dying because he just didn't saw the cover object in between all the other objects. So that's like the important part, to be like really communicate with design, right? To find out like, okay, what's the super important part, what's intended, and then kind of be able to work around it. There might be areas where you need to have a cover object that needs to be a box and needs to be in the middle of the room. And sometimes it is what it is, right? There is just no super creative solution to fix that. But in most cases, you can make something, right? There could be, I don't know, like parts of a building that is main. Like, I think there was like one area where we had a hard time to figure out what we could do, but then we made a construction site out of this this area. It's like, oh yeah, they were renovating it, so there's a lot of material and boxes and crates. Maybe they were like packing up the furniture for moving it out of the way, so it's not, so they can renovate and repaint and then this area So we kind of made an excuse to be able to put all these cover objects that we needed for the combat space. But still, we still, with that idea, kind of added another level of storytelling to it, because now the room was not just like this room, right? It was also like, oh, they were doing some refurbishing, rebuilding, renovation on
this. Storytelling, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So it's you would say that level design comes first because it still is a game and it still needs to work, because the best environment, best looking environment never works when the level design is not right.
Yeah, totally. I think it's super important that the level design is feeling good and as intended. I mean, especially as an environment artist, you also have like a responsibility to make sure that the game plays good, like collision and stuff like that. Like all the technical implementations need to be working as well. So, I would say like the level design usually comes from like a higher level perspective. They see more of the game in context, because as an environment artist, you can get stuck a little bit in your little corner that you're working on for so long. So it's always kind of good to kind of really stay in touch, and make sure that level design is satisfied, because at the end, yeah, we're making a game. And even though, of course, we want to make sure that the game looks as best as possible and runs as smooth as possible, but it needs to play as well, as good as possible. That's the main goal of a game, to play well, to is fun. And of course, like there's a lot of different aspects. You can also kind of argue, well, a good looking game can be a lot of fun for people, right?
Sure.
It looks awesome, and you can explore it, and there's detail everywhere. But you want to make sure that, because it can also get boring when it's just nothing there and you can just explore forever and it's nothing. You know, it's like a really important part that both disciplines work really close together to make sure, on the other side, of course, like if design really is not able to do any compromise and they make something that might really not look good, honestly, in my career, it never happened, right? There was never this designer that was like designing something that may play well but makes no sense in terms of, but that never happened. And usually you can make sense out of the block art.
Yeah. So you are a lead environment artist. So is this your first like real lead position? Have you been leading before?
I was a lead briefly at a startup, but I think it doesn't really count because it was a really small startup and you wear a lot of different hats in that. It felt more like I was doing like a lot of different things. So now in like a more like renowned established company, taking over like a lead role feels more like an actual lead position to me than in a startup role.
Okay, so what does it take to become a lead artist? Because I think that's a really high step up from you starting out as a normal environment artist.
That's a good question. I more or less stumbled into that, I feel like. I think with like when you have a certain amount of experience, that's maybe the more natural kind of progression in your career. Of course, in the last couple of years, there's a lot of I saw that the rise of the principal role coming up, which I think is pretty good, because not everybody wants to be a lead, which is understandable because you're moving a little bit away from IC work to management, which is something that I kind of wanted to try out for a couple of years now, because I'm kind of interested in these aspects. As long as I can still make some art here and there. Like ideally, you have a 60-40 break, which is like 60% art and 40% management. But it's not true for every role. That is probably is also dependent on where you are in your project.
That's true.
Production or main production or polishing phase. That may change as well. Yeah, but so far I'm enjoying it. It's definitely different. A lot more meetings. Can also be like involved in a lot more different things, which I think is pretty cool.
So you have a bit more like an even bigger overview over the project, you would say?
I think so. Yeah, because like I have more touch points with other department leads, which was handled by my lead in the past, in most cases. So now that's like quite interesting to see. Also like, depends of course on the project as well, like how big the project is, where you are at the inside the project, like what kind of phase.
So I would say like maybe in production, there is even more art to do, right? There is more art for you as well as a lead.
That depends, I would say. Because when you're like in a main production as a lead artist, depends definitely how many other direct reports you have as a lead, like how many artists that that are working with you. So if there's a lot of artists working and there's a lot of outsourcing going on, there might be just not much time. And you have to give feedback all the time because everybody's producing awesome stuff all the time. And you in reviews and give them feedback all the time. And then I'd be more involved in scheduling, make sure that everything goes smooth. Maybe earlier project phase where style and workflows have to be established. That is maybe like an area where there's more hands-on work needed. I can also see like in the end of the project, there's a little bit more hands-on involved as well when everybody is kind of working on their stuff. Everything is there, you know, like you hit your alpha, your beta. Now you just need to polish up the rest and optimize. That's where all hands on deck basically help out to crunch these bugs and make sure that it looks as good as it can. That's also like a time where you as a lead can definitely dive in. But again, it really depends on the project, on the team that you're working on, how many teammates you have that you have to manage. How many other leads are there?
It'll
help you out. How's the production producers? Do they help out with scheduling, or is this on your plate?
Yeah, I learned that producers are like a huge help for leads because they kind of have, because they are mostly managers. Like they are project managers, I would say. I think every lead is always super happy when they have some producers on their side, who like get some management stuff off the table.
Yeah, they have all the Excel skills.
Exactly, they're Jira junkies.
Right? I'm happy that they help out with Jira and stuff. Yeah.
Nice. All right, Martin. This was an amazing insight of your experience in the games industry. So what was like the main step for you to move to the States? Like, was it just the industry or the positions?
Yeah, I think I'm a huge Naughty Dog fan. I think that I'm a huge Uncharted fan, I think, particularly. So that was like super awesome. That's where I wanted to go. Plus California is like kind of a dream country area. It's like, it was pretty awesome. So I think these two, mainly Naughty Dog's Uncharted series, was like driving me to go here, which is great. In the meanwhile, I had opportunities to work in other awesome studios. So that's really cool as well.
Yeah, we also worked on Batman. I really like the series and the games.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah.
Series of games, I would say. They were amazing. I remember playing the first Arkham Asylum. I was like, oof, it was never seen before in terms of superhero games.
They're awesome. Yeah, especially like can't believe, like, even though it's super, I mean, super old, it's old now, Arkham Knight, the game I worked on back then, mm-hmm. but what it did tech-wise, I think, holds up pretty well.
Yeah. I saw some comparison between, was it Gotham Knights and Arkham Knight? They were like, Arkham Knight is still looking super amazing compared. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, they did an awesome job back then. Yeah.
Yeah. So how was it like how was it for the young Martin to tell their friends, you go to the States and work for Naughty Dog and work on Uncharted? Because like back in the days, if I told someone from my friends, I want to go into the games industry, everyone laughed and everyone like, you can't earn money. Are you playing video games all day? So this was like, it's still like a bit laughable, but how was it for you?
For me, I think it was like I didn't really realize it till I was there in the office. There's this moment I still remember. Like Naughty Dog has like this awesome wall with this big like logo, like this dog paw on the wall.
Yeah.
And I remember like I was already a few days working there, and it's coming in at some day and I see the logo, and it's like I had to kind of smile. It's like, wow, I'm really here. Because it took also a while to get like the application process in, the art test in, and especially the visa. It took a year to get the visa working. So finally I was there, and it was like a really awesome experience. Yeah. But I can't really recall too much about my close friends, I think, because I guess the thing was that this whole thing, because the visa was in the making for so long, there was not this moment, hey, I'm going. It's like, it was like for years. It was literally like, hey, I'm going to Naughty Dog. It's happening at some point. I'll be going.
That's crazy.
I just had to wait for all these kind of paperwork, you know, like the visa stuff. And so I think it was not like this moment. It was more like a long process, you know. And I was working at Crytek when I started working on this art test. So my whole Rocksteady time was in between already. Talked with Naughty Dog until I started, so it was kind of crazy.
So Rocksteady is in the UK.
Yeah, that's right.
So you already moved from Germany to the UK, and then you
went from the UK
to the States.
Yeah.
Okay. So, how was Crytek back then? Because I worked at Crytek as well. I think lots of things changed. I worked on The Hunt. It was like. Mm-hmm. You worked on Crysis, right?
Yeah, I worked on Crysis 2 and then Crysis 3, yeah.
Okay, so can it run Crysis? This was always like, I remember as a kid when
oh, like, yeah, totally, yeah.
PC
yeah.
gaming was coming up and like PC Master Race was coming up. It was always the joke with Crysis and how they like push the technical limits. So I'm pretty excited what they are planning with number 4.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm stoked about it. I mean, also like when I worked at Crytek, CryEngine was a big thing. They were more like competing with Unreal at the time. I think it was still like a little bit the underdog because Epic already at the time with Unreal 3, they put a lot of kind of effort and money into their licensing. And Crytek was doing it a little bit more like, I would say in air quotes, on the side, you know, they were mainly doing games. So they did it like the old school way, right? Like, you know, like how id Software did it. Like, hey, we made a really awesome engine, but we made it to make our games. But if you want to license it, here you go, right? And even though Crytek licensing department, I think it was still like a little bit like not as big budget wise as maybe Unreal was, but especially like on Crysis 2, there was a big push for licensing Unreal, the CryEngine more. There was a rise for Xbox One developed. So at the time, like Crytek was really like this big kind of AAA game studio, the only one in Germany at the time. Maybe Jaga was there, but Crytek was really like the kind of company where you wanted to be when you worked in Germany on games, because they had awesome tech. I really liked Crysis 1. I really liked Far Cry. I played both of them when they came out. So they were like great shooter games. And I think Crysis 2 was good too. So it was fun. Like you really can tell like they really were like, there was like the pinnacle, I guess, a little bit, like Crysis 2 times.
Yeah.
where they were really like pushing for
tech. Yeah, and yeah. So that's the reason why it's will be super interesting what they will do with Crysis 4, because they had such a idle between 3 and 4. So because they are hiring like crazy for this title, so I imagine this will be like super big.
Yeah, like I think this, we're coming back at the earlier question where you asked like what's the difference. I feel like with Crysis 1, maybe 2 and 3, like 2 and 3, like this is where you can tell, okay, wow, now production is getting really expensive because now quality bars are so high. Like I think with Crysis 1, there was like the time where, you know, you can actually make a game and it can look still really, really good with good tech. But now on top of that, you have to have really good art direction. Not saying that Crysis 1 has not good art direction. It has. I think it was a great idea with the frozen jungle and stuff. But I think Crysis 1 was a little bit more done, I would say, like, air quotes again, a bit more classic, old school kind of thing, where, you know, they low poly model a rock and then you put it in the engine and it looks good, you know. That kind of changes where you make like high polys and bake it, you know, and there's so much work needed in order to make it really, really good. And so now that's why I'm like super curious, like how Crysis 4 is gonna look, because Unreal 5 is out, which is an awesome piece of tech. So let's see how the latest CryEngine is looking. I'm pretty sure they can make a really good looking game. It's just like, yeah, standards are so high now. Like I think it's really hard, like what Crytek did back then on Crysis 1, where they were like, wow, they're ahead of the time by years.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not sure if we can do this anymore without having
super hard. Massive, I can imagine.
Yeah, so that's like super interesting. But Crysis is like this franchise, right? That kind of sells with or was like known for its tech power and awesome graphics quality. So let's see. So that's why I'm so curious about it. Like, what can they do with modern tech and modern production? In order to kind of try to re-achieve this kind of standard.
Yeah. I'm also super interested how it's going to look. But I think we have to wait some more years, I imagine. This will take some more time.
Awesome.
All right, Martin. Thank you so much for taking the time on your early Saturday.
It's not so early anymore, but yeah, thanks for having me.
It was great. I will put all your information in the info box. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
And take care.
Awesome.
Bye bye, Martin.
You too. Bye bye.